Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York. Welcome you to this October 12th, and that is Indigenous Peoples Day edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 M, and that is WBAI in collaboration with YCRadio.org. Yes, this is Indigenous Peoples Day, and on this Indigenous People Day, we have a very special guest calling us all the way from Dominica. We'll be joined shortly by the Honorable Minister Kavir Frederick, who's the Minister for Environment and Rural Modernization and Kalaninga Upliftment from Dominica. Well, before we get started, just want to remind people that the census, you can still fill out the census. You can do so up until October 31st. We talked about that last week with Mayor Roz J. Baraka. Incredibly important that you do that. And early voting will begin on October 24th. There's no question. Like it, dislike it, or whatever. Participate or not participating. This will be one of the most consequential elections in the history of these United States of America. Lord, have mercy. We have never seen such stuff happen, and it's going on right now. So if you choose to, early voting begins October 24th, which means you can avoid all those lines and all that. That's what my wife and partner and I hope to do. There's a voting site at York College, Astley, and that's the one that we'll be journeying to in order to sign up to cast our ballot. We're not going to miss this one. Frankly, I never do, but we really are not going to miss this one. COVID-19, we continue to appeal for people to have discipline. There are several neighborhoods in Queens and Brooklyn that have been put on lockdown or partial lockdown because the cases are spiking. And they're spiking to some degree because people are no longer being as disciplined as they ought to be. People are just not functioning effectively. We're not doing what they should be doing. And so, therefore, it's incredibly important that we take care of each other. I make that appeal every week. It's not about me, myself, and I. It's about we, us, and our. It's going to be rough. You know, I'm not really looking forward to this winter that's been coming up. I'm tired of being inside, venturing out only a little bit, Zoom meetings. You know, I'm Zooming all the time. But I'm doing it not only for my own self-preservation, but for the preservation of others. We've got to do this together. I actually like the idea of shared values, the notion that people can come together as human beings and work together to conquer and to overcome a crisis like this. That's why leadership is needing, and unfortunately, we've not had that kind of leadership by the current resident in the White House. Finally, you heard the advertisement. I'm glad on the community listening line. We really need that community listening line now. Appreciate people who are calling in. There's lots of issues out there. Going back to school, what's going on with school? What's going on in my neighborhood? Domestic abuse, child abuse, people being unfortunately suicidal in some instances. We really need this kind of culturally appropriate, and by culturally appropriate, we mean a listening line where people can call in to get really professional listening. The referrals will be to professional counselors, social workers, psychologists, psychiatrists, people who are dealing with domestic abuse. And we have it lined up in an excellent cadre, if you will, of people who will handle these kinds of crises. So the number to call again is 877-719-1117, 877-719-1117. And we appreciate the fact that WBAI is partnering with the Institute of the Black World 21st Century on this very important initiative. So we're looking forward to that. Well, again, this is Indigenous Peoples Day, and we anticipate hearing from our guests, we hope, from Dominica in short order. We are, again, taking note of the fact, it's important that we take note of the fact that Indigenous Peoples Day is a triumph, really, for the people who came together and said, you know, it's not that we have anything against Italians. This is not an anti-Italian issue. It is just that the particular person who was designated to be honored on this particular day is someone who, frankly, is not someone who should be heralded. And so people organized and they really pushed back to create Indigenous Peoples Day, and we're really delighted that this is the case. So again, our program today will be devoted up. We'll have an opportunity during the soapbox sector for you to call in if you choose to, and to actually give your opinions about Indigenous Peoples Day as well. Now we're joined by our very, very special guest, again, who's calling us all the way from Dominica. We work very, very hard. And I have to give a shout out to Don Rojas. Don Rojas, who a former general manager of WBAI, but legendary in terms of his work, particularly the high water point of which was serving as the press secretary for the late, great Maurice Bishop, of the Prime Minister of the People's Revolutionary Government of Grenada. Knew and knows of our guest and was able to facilitate getting him to be a part of our program today as a guest, because I really, really wanted to look at the issue of Native genocide in the Caribbean and the case for reparatory justice. And so it's in that context that we're delighted to welcome to our Vantage Point audience Honorable Cozier P. Frederick. He is the Minister for Environment, Rural Modernization, and Kalanega, I hope I have that right, Upliftment. Minister Frederick, welcome to Vantage Point.
Thank you so much, brother, from the North. I think my indigenous brothers in up north would refer to the space as Turtle Island, I believe. It's now the United States, and we know the reasons why it has got to that point. However, I just want to say a shout-out to all your listeners around the globe and in Turtle Island. And I'm happy to be calling from a very, very, very small island in the archipelago, in the Caribbean archipelago. And I'm happy for that opportunity to lend my voice to the conversation about reparations and justice for indigenous peoples and also for people of African descent. So I'm happy to be here on this evening and to share with your listeners. Thank you.
Well, we're certainly delighted to have you in that regard. And as I shared with you in our conversation, I have fond memories, really, of Dominica, visiting Dominica back in the 80s and working with leaders like Bill Rivera, who actually did some studying at Cornell University with my dear beloved friend, Dr. James Turner, Atherton Martin, who was very much involved for many years in the cooperative movement. And, of course, Rosie Douglas, who freedom fighter who became Prime Minister. So I really, really, you know, have fond memories up and down those hills and bananas forever in Dominica. But let's start. That's right. Bananas forever. But let's start there quickly. Would you just situate Dominica in the Caribbean and talk to our audience a bit about your nation, population, the economy, just in case people are not aware? People tend to know about Barbados. They know about Jamaica, Trinidad. But they may not know much about Dominica. Can you start there, please?
Yes. So Dominica is a former British colony. It is not to be confused with Dominican Republic. Although the island is actually a republic, it doesn't have the queen as a head of state. It has a symbolic president, It's been an independent nation since 1978. The population is roughly 70,000 people. The economy is based on agriculture for a very long time, and in the recent time, we have looked toward the tourist dollar to sustain. In terms of the geographical location, it is situated between the French departments of Martinique and Guadeloupe. It's one of the bigger islands of the what we now know as the Windward Islands, along with St. Lucia, St. Vincent, and Grenada. It's an English-speaking country. The second language is Creole, which is the French patois. Because we do have a very interesting history on the island, one that has the island juggled between the two European superpowers at the time within the colonial experience, the French and the British. And so we have a Creole that is similar to the one spoken in Haiti, in Senegal, in Guadeloupe and Martinique, and also some of the other smaller islands in the West Africa and the Caribbean. So it is that space. You know, we do have a democratic system of government. We have our own parliament. It's a unicameral parliament, one house. The island is demarcated into 21 constituencies represented by a member of parliament. We do have the normal services that are given out by the governance. So we have utilities. We have all of those modern trappings. And right now we are about to boast that we are one of the few islands that is sort of riding over the COVID-19. We have been able to contain it. We have been able to have protocols in place so that we could mitigate its spread. So it's a wonderful space. It's one that is very, very interesting. It is one that is very rugged. It's a hiker's paradise. We have 365 rivers. We have a number of mountains, a number of national parks. We do have an endemic bird species in terms of the Cicero parrot. We are one of the islands that are supposed to have one of the best on diving and also whale watching. It's almost more than 80%. So it's a very interesting island, not to be confused, very, very small, between the French islands of Martinique and Guadeloupe, and it is an English-speaking island.
Right. Well, now, you are a minister of government, and Don has told me a little bit about your background, but tell our audience about a bit about your background, particularly why you became, dare I say, a political activist who is now in the government.
Yes, it's an interesting story. I grew up in a family that was deeply political, but rightly so. They were political along the tribal politics. So my uncle and my dad were pastor tribal chiefs. In terms of international context, they were sort of mayors of small towns. So they were sort of mayors of the indigenous community. So I grew up within that context. I taught for a number of years. I learned a number of the traditional arts and crafts and artistic impressions. So I'm a musician. I'm a martial artist. I carve. I paint. I do traditional tattoos. So that was my background growing up in that community. I went off for a little while to do the high school experience in the town of Roseau, away from the reservation, because I did live in a reservation for a long time. I still do. I got inspired to want to add more, reading the histories, look at the stories from the European perspective. I realized there were sort of errors in there and things that need to be clarified. So I went off into the university to study politics and history. I came back into the community and studied this movement and developed established a heritage project to unearth some of the work. I've done a lot of links with universities like the Leiden in Holland, Cornell in the U.S., etc. To do work and to unearth, and I was sort of for a very long time a sort of focal point for anyone interested in doing history on the island. And you know, during that course of my study and my experiences with others, I realized that if I have to make a change, it has to be sort of from a policy level. So I used my training in politics as a political scientist to sort of analyze the political atmosphere at the time. And in 2019, I thought that I should participate rather than sitting on the fence. I want to participate in active politics. I ran for office in December. I won a very large majority. Coming into the government as an indigenous person, I was offered the opportunity to serve as the Minister of the Environment and Kalinago Upliftment and also rural modernization, which is kind of in sync with what I've been doing all my life, really, looking out for the environment and looking out for people, looking out for indigenous cultures, and trying to make the conversation be one that is much more national rather than being closed doors. So I'm happy for the opportunity to serve at that level. It's been a wonderful experience so far because it offers one an opportunity to help change and help make change. And make change from the vantage point of having all of the advice around you, all of the information around you.
Right.
So my attempt is to make change not based on emotions alone, but based on the science and the relevance of data. And that's why I'm happy to sit here to serve. Yeah.
You're listening to the Honorable Kozier P. Frederick. He is the Minister of Environment, Rural Modernization, and Kalinaga Upliftment, from coming to us today from the island nation of Dominica. Well, let's talk a bit about the major subject for today. Native genocide is a topic which I have some familiarity with as a former professor. Just having to look at the horrific annihilation of the Caribs, the Arawaks, do a lot of work in Haiti, so became somewhat familiar with the Taina. And, of course, Howard Zinn talks about these horrific crimes in his iconic book, his seminal book, A People's History of the United States. And in that book, he talks about the very first page, if I recall correctly, he talks about the arrival of Christopher Columbus and Columbus being welcomed by indigenous people who came out to greet him. And it is Columbus is quoted as saying something to the effect how noble and gracious and wonderful these people look and are. And he said, with about 50 men, I may be misquoting him there, but with a small number of men, we could conquer them and make them our servants. And so I cite that because, in a way, this is the beginning of one of the greatest tragedies in the history of the world. So I'm wondering, beginning with sort of a regional lens and then focusing on your own ancestors in Dominica, would you just share with our audience sort of the enormity of this tragedy and how it unfolded in the region?
Yeah, thanks for that opportunity. I want to make it very, very clear that I am of the firm view that the demise of what we now know as the Caribbean, or what I would like to eventually be called the Kalinago Island Civilization, which is what we know as the Caribbean region. The demise of the people within that space really began in 1452. And it appears to begin under the pretext of the papal bull. There's a papal bull, Romanus Pontifex, and a later bull in 1493 called the Inter Cetera, the Christian Doctrine of Discovery. And so this is what began the demise. At the onset of the Christian doctrinal discovery, European Christians began their efforts to expand the colonial rule and, by extension, the Christian kingdom throughout the world. Now, it appears that these papal bulls sanctioned openly that Christian nations were to, and I quote, capture, vanquish, and subdue Saracens, pagans, and other enemies of Christ, put them into perpetual slavery and take all their possessions and property. It was also authorized that these explorers to take possessions of all lands discovered that were not under the dominion of any Christian ruler. Very, very important. So instances of such undertakings were consistently perpetuated. And so there are abundant volumes on the early colonial efforts. And they, for example, articulate that the Portuguese were centered on the western coast of Africa and what they call the claim land, while engaging in trafficking of African slaves. Most of the conversation also linked to the fact that the Spanish were also quick to follow suit in the effort to claim land that Columbus had discovered, for example. And this sort of behavior was emulated by other European Christian nations. Very, very important point. And to later engage in efforts to claim lands, claim all the natural resources, and have slaves from the island civilization to what we now call the North Central South America, and even extending into the Pacific. So my friends, it appears that without a doubt, they have been goals. These have been goals by the settler colonial state, and the goals were always the same. They endeavored to physically remove indigenous population, whether through extermination, relocation, or assimilation. We can also speak to the appropriation of lands and resources, and to expand at the end the riches of the settler state. Although I want to argue that although the practice was maintained throughout the colonial project, there was resistance.
Right.
And that's very critical, because sometimes we speak about what was done by the European conquest, but I'm not highlighting that we didn't sit idly by. So we did not stay as the noble savages or the noble folks. We actually had to stand up, and throughout the discourse and throughout some of the chronicles, you would realize that the canoe, a very important piece of material culture, still exists today within the Kainago territory where I live. It was an important part of that resistance. So, for instance, the early stories were told of the Kainago being shared by other tribes due to our practice of making lightning waves. There was little defense against the great seamanship of our superior craft. And some scholars observed that, for instance, that the Kainago even fell on loaded vessels in the mid-ocean. And so they appear to be the warfare of being swift and very, very fast. And it appears that the use of such strategies against Europeans proved useful, since they did not engage in open warfare or large-scale extended warfare, but were very, very wise in their resistance. So my friends, I think that we have also an instance where the first encounter of resistance by Columbus. It's been said by a few scholars that when Christopher Columbus sent his men on shore on November 1493 to explore and to find water, instead they encountered a canoe full of Kainago ambivores and arrows in Salt River on the island of Santa Cruz, now known as St. Croix, of the U.S. Virgin Islands. It was said that each side suffered fatalities in what I have found out to be the first documented resistance by natives to European explorers in the New World. And the story continues. So, for instance, it is sort of general knowledge that when Columbus returned to Spain, both to report his findings and to gather men, he left about 35 men who were subsequently wiped out by warriors. So really, at that point, even at the onset of colonization, resistance had begun. And throughout the context of our history, what's recorded by the European scholars, there were similar scenes of European colonization efforts, and there were repeated similar responses by indigenous resistance for the next several hundred years. And the records primarily relate such resistance between the 1624, the 1620s to the 1700s. So we have all of this happening here in a space, and we need to have this conversation that moves beyond just away from conquering people, but also want a people who stood up and fought even against a massive or a much more well-organized civilization. Friends, I suspect that all of the colonial records suggest that the invading European forces endeavor to destabilize and eventually rid the Carinago from the archipelago. A people, it appears that were existent with government structures, there was a language, there were traditional practices, there was a cosmogony, they had their own military, there were social norms. Now, I say this on the evidence available in the chronicles of the explorers themselves, who all serve some sort of, I argue, mercenary intent of an emerging mercantilist system, while they discredited the true nature of a Carinago civilization. So, for instance, Hilary Beckles, the leader in the Caribbean region on reparative justice, he speaks to the kind of irrepressible military resistance. So for instance, he speaks to the Carinago first targeted the establishing the minds of the Europeans, not as a noble savage, but rather at that point a vicious cannibal. So you could see how the script flipped. When we were welcoming and helpful, when we were able to give resources and share as fellow humans, we were noble savages. The moment we started resisting all of those crimes by the invading forces, we are now coined as vicious cannibals.
Right.
So it's such a very interesting story, and even when we bring it, if we fast forward 200 years into the colonial experience, would realize that only two islands in the Caribbean region actually stood up and against the or were able through the geography to stand up against the capitalist enterprise of the Europeans. So so for more than 200 years, Dominica, where I'm from, and Saint Vincent,
right,
were those two islands. And because of this massive, what I call the massive genocidal project of the European invaders, throughout the colonial period, we were systematically forced to retreat in very, very small numbers to St. Vincent and Dominica. And and a very important point here, comrades, we are retreating in small numbers to these islands, but we were expected to be assimilated into the evolving plantation economy. So it is very, very clear that as the colonization continues to manifest itself for the Caribbean, they need to limit the movement, and also I suggest the self-determination of the indigenous population continued within the island. Now there will be a shift for sure. So this apparent natural European phenomenon of displacing indigenous peoples, then possessing their domains, continued during this period as a legal means that forced us to become foreigners in our own land.
Right.
It's incredible, that sort of narrative. And now, we could argue that at this juncture, the local population in every sense was still considered less human and would have to be specifically controlled, especially if they continue to be some sort of hindrance in the path of the so-called European development. So to such an end, the initial responses of the colonial presence by the population would continue to persist during this sort of period. There are a lot of discussions within the context of the plantation economy itself. The Carinago people always refused to surrender. They kept the entire region in sort of a marginal relation to slavery in North America for over 200 years. And I would argue that they have made some significant contributions to the region's anti-slavery tradition. So it's not by chance that we are having this conversation, that there's a deep connection with people of African descent and people who have suffered loss of the forefathers to genocide. And I want to say at this point that the strategies of the Europeans was always to suppress a smaller population. So it's such a very interesting story. It's one that is so important to get out there. Like I said earlier on, we speak to the 17th century becoming a refuge of the Caribbean islands and St. Vincent and Dominica. Now, it is very evident that the topography, and you've been to Dominica, with its rugged mountains, it's very thick forest, very harsh coastline, it provided sort of a natural stronghold for any form of retreat, one, and also from an invading force. And a network of trails and lookout points, or I would argue offensive positions, were established by the Kalinago, which later would prove very, very, very useful to black resistance. I just want to pause, brother, for a little while. I think I'm going off a bit.
No. This is all great, and we're getting this incredible lesson on Indigenous Peoples Day. Because that flows really into my next question. Obviously, you know, the resistance, you're laying it out that this was not, you know, people laying over or surrendering. There was massive resistance. It was also massive genocide. You know, I don't know the numbers, but certainly by some estimates in the millions of people who really ultimately lost their lives, some of which were to these foreign European diseases that were indeed where there was no immunity, at least initially, from some of the indigenous people. But the question I want to pose is, how important is the CARICOM demand for reparatory justice from the former colonial powers? How important is this demand for reparatory justice for Native genocide and African enslavement?
The call is so very, very important, because for your listeners, it's important to know that the CARICOM Reparations Commission has highlighted the 10 points. So there's a 10-point action plan that we think would be very useful in helping people to understand the magnitude of what was done in terms of the genocide and slavery. And also, these are areas that we feel, we sense, would bring some sort of equity to the entire conversation. So, for instance, we are in full support and we need a full and formal apology for slavery, for instance. That's a very, very important point. Because first, the oppressors have to admit that they were in the wrong. Very, very important. And the second thing we also need, which is important for reparative justice, is the opportunity for repatriation. There was a trade of bodies coming into the region, and it is important that we are able to go back if we choose, if you have African descent. A very important point, while I'm going to speak a pin on the important point here, is also the Indigenous Peoples Development Program.
Yes.
So within this 10-point program, there's actually a point that speaks to the Indigenous program. And if I briefly highlight the most important point here, we are stating that the governments of Europe committed genocide upon the native Caribbean population. Military commanders were given official instructions by the government to eliminate these communities and to remove those who survived from the region. Genocide and land appropriation went hand in hand. A community, and this is where the figures come in, a community of over 3 million in the 1700s had been reduced to less than 30,000 in 2000. Survivors remain traumatized, landless, and are the most marginalized social group within the region. The University of the West Indies offers an Indigenous People Scholarship at this point in an effort to do some form of rehabilitation. But this is insufficient. So a development plan is required to rehabilitate this Indigenous community. So these are three of the main programs there. We're also looking to at the establishment of institutions, cultural institutions that would highlight the cultural aspects of our community. We also have to look at the public health crisis, because it appears that the people of African descent have the highest incidence in the world of chronic diseases in the forms of hypertension and type 2 diabetes. And it is clear that this pandemic is the direct result of the nutritional experience, physical and emotional brutality, and overall stress profiles associated with slavery, genocide, and even in South Africa, apartheid. It's very, very important. We have to go for that public health crisis. We also have to look to working on illiteracy eradication, because it is very, very clear that at the end of the European colonial period, in most parts of the Caribbean, the British in particular, left black and indigenous communities in a general state of illiteracy. It's very, very clear. We argue that some 70% of blacks in British colonies were functionally illiterate in the 1960s. Mm. That's only about a generation ago.
Right.
Now, when the nation states began to appear, for example, Jamaica, large communities, it was home to the largest number of sub-citizens. So it is very, very important that we focus on the illiteracy eradication. Also, friends, we also have to look toward the African Knowledge Program. There was a forced separation from the African mainland in the very same way that there was a forced brutalization of the indigenous people. People from Africa, from the African mainland, were forced out. So we have to have programs to have a connection with that sort of route. And for sure, that is there's another point that is important to note, and it's something that we have to deal with, because it's very, very, very ticklish. It's very, very brittle. It's the whole idea of having some form of psychological rehabilitation.
Yes, absolutely.
It's very, very clear that for over 400 years, Africans and their descendants were classified in law. It was legal in law as non-human, as property, as real estate. They were denied recognition as members of the human family by laws derived from the parliaments and palaces of Europe. So we have to look towards that sort of rehabilitation of the minds of people, and how we could make them make people stronger and have the psyche repaired. And also, finally, I would maybe want to say, for example, technology transfer is important also. So we know that for 400 years, the trade and production policies of Europe could be summed up in the British slogan. For example, if we state clearly from the Commission, not a nail is to be made in the colonies. So they were extracting things from the colonies, and not producing and having the technology transferred into the local economy. And one of the bigger things we're looking forward to, in terms of the Commission's 10-point plan, is debt cancellation, because we know that the Caribbean governments have emerged from slavery and have inherited massive crisis of community poverty, and
right.
We are unprepared, our sort of unpreparedness for development. So we have to look towards some form of debt cancellation. So we on the island here, we understand this movement, and we are very supportive of the Caribbean Commission as work to look at the reparative justice. So.
Right. Well, Minister Kozier P. Frederick, we're really out of time. So excellent enunciation of the background and the history. And, of course, the National African American Reparations Commission, of which Don Rojas is one of the administrators, I am the convener of SAME, who has a very close working relationship with the CARICOM Reparations Commission. And we have a 10-point program that in some ways is modeled after the CARICOM 10-point reparations program, all of which, by the way, can be found on the IBW website, IBW21.org. That's IBW21.org, where we have the most extensive reparations, online reparations resource center in the world. Again, thanks to the incredible work of Don Rojas. As we conclude, Minister Cozier P. Frederick, where can people learn more about the history of your people, the history of indigenous people and the struggles that you've talked about? Is there a website that people can go to where some of this information is shared?
Yeah, so we do have a cultural village that the intention was to remodel the pre-colonial community, and within that space one can interact with some of the material culture from the pre-colonial period. And also there's a website. It's called the Kalinago Barana Ote. It's all Kalinago words. It's all indigenous words. It means the Kalinago community next to the sea. And I could share with you the link via email.
Okay.
So you could have it as a link. Also, we have bits of information at the ministry where I sit. So the government portal is open. We could access the government portal and look for that kind of material. But one thing I want to also mention is the fact that within the context of the Indigenous Peoples Program, one of the issues we have to deal with is encouraging the research of the Indigenous heritage. There's not enough research done, and it's very limited. So one of the things we want to do is to encourage young intellectuals to delve into the study of that particular instance in history and to unearth more. I think there's so much more to unearth. Most of the work done in terms of reparations has been done through the archives of the British archives, for instance. I think there's a lot to be unearthed in the Portuguese archives and also the Spanish archives. So we still have a lot more work to do, but there's some information out there. And I just want to encourage young folks out there who are interested in humanity. If you're interested in humanity, you really should look toward a study of history to know where we came from or where we ought to go, and also to right some of those misconceptions that have been perpetuated over time.
Right. Well, this has been a really, really very powerful and provocative and informative interview. We really, really appreciate you taking time from your governmental duties. Again, Minister Cozier P. Frederick, Minister of Environment, Rural Modernization, and Kalinago Upliftment, all the way from the nation of Dominica. We thank you so much for spending time with our Vantage Point audience this afternoon here on WBAI.
Thank you for the opportunity to share, and I'm open to you anytime for that sort of conversation.
Well, I look forward to getting back that way sometime because, again, I have, again, cherished memories there and whatnot. So I hope to get back to Dominica once we're allowed to travel and get this COVID pandemic under control. I wish we could get it under control as well as you have in Dominica. You apparently have some good leadership down there. We are infected with Agent Orange up here, but that's a story for another time. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Okay, have a good one.
All right. Again, to our listening audience, we had allocated really about 30 minutes for that interview, but I couldn't stop it. I thought it was important that you get that information. It is Indigenous Peoples Day, and to get that history, which has been discussed here on WBI before. In fact, some of the papal bulls and that were talked about are part of the premiums that are often offered on WBAI. In fact, I've offered one of the premiums on Indigenous people before as well. Well, we have only about 10 minutes for our soapbox for you to call in. And there may be some people from Dominica who want to call and just give a shout out and to share their experiences. There may be people who are from the Garifuna community or people who are indigenous to the region who may want to give a shout out as well. Really appreciated that interview with, again, the minister from Dominica. 212-209-2877. We'll get you into our rapid response, rapid answer and question period on the soapbox. 212-209-2877. So that's one of the topics that we're open to talking about. Also, the issue of H.R. 40 is important. But I guess the first thing is, again, the point of the conversation today was that Europe and the United States, they must pay for the genocidal dispossession of native people, not only in the Caribbean, but in this country as well. We have yet to really repair the damages for the dispossession, the genocidal, brutal dispossession of native people in this country. That needs to be done. And certainly in the 10-point program, the preamble that we outline with the National Reparations, National African American Reparations Commission, we lay that out. And we will continue to do so because we're looking for the holistic repair of all the people who were oppressed by European colonialism. You know, the whole onslaught of capitalism into this hemisphere. So H.R. 40, which is the bill to study reparations proposals for African Americans, not just reparations, not just studying whether, but how, is really gaining steam in the Congress of the United States. The second thing I want to quickly point to is on the IBW website, Why We March. This is the 25th anniversary of the historic Million Man March. And I wish we had a little bit more time because, you know, it'd be great for those who marched to call and say why you marched 25 years ago and, you know, to talk about, you know, what you think was accomplished by the Million Man March. There will be a series of panels that are coming up. You can go to the IBW website and you can get that information. I think it's this coming Friday or maybe this coming Thursday evening. But whatever, either way, you will find it on the IBW website, prominently displayed right now, Why We Marched, the 25th anniversary of the Million Man March. So just a few minutes left now, 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. We can entertain a couple of calls, a few calls, maybe four or five. If people are succinct in their comments, I wish I had hoped to have more calls, but absolutely, I just could not cut off that that interview with our minister from down in Dominica. And actually, I'm having a little technical difficulties now picking up whether I have a caller or not, because we have a system for doing that. And my computer.
Hey, Dr. Downs, we actually do have a couple of calls right now. We have three, actually.
All right. Well, that's great because my computer shut down on me a minute. So let's go immediately to our callers.
All righty.
All right. Immediately to our callers. This afternoon, good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Yes. Am I on the air?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Okay, good. Listen, I have heard very little information about Dominica, but I have always shown a lot of interest. And now I would like to visit the island, maybe this month or the 7 months. And I heard that the coronavirus is very low rate there. And is it... do they encourage people to go visit there, or what's the situation as far as visiting?
Oh no! They definitely
know more about the island.
No, they definitely encourage people to visit. And as I related, I went there back in the 80s, but maybe 2 years or so ago, my wife and I were on a cruise. We like to cruise, and I deliberately picked one that would take us to Dominica and on into Martinique and some other places, and had an opportunity to connect with some old friends there, go up into the rainforest. It is a beautiful, 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 beautiful country. So I guess you can just really just Google Dominica and Google Dominica, and I'm sure the Tourist Bureau will come up and they will tell you how you can connect. And yes, he's indicating that they have been able to keep COVID, and that's true, in fact, across the Caribbean and many of the nations. They have been able to keep it under control because people have largely been willing to do what leadership has asked them to do in terms of wearing masks, social distancing, and those kind of things in a way that's it's marvelous. Here are countries that are supposedly not as well developed, obviously, as the United States, but yet they are developed at least in terms of their willingness to share with each other and take care of each other, which is so important. We have to take care of each other. If we do that, then we are able to control this this terrible COVID-19 virus. So look, appreciate your call and appreciate your interest in Dominica. So go and Google them and go there and visit. All right, we're going to go to our next caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Okay. Yes, I'm just calling just to make a comment.
Yes, go right ahead.
Yes, I am a person from Garifuna descent. In fact,
yes.
My family can relate to Honduras, Spanish Honduras, and British Honduras, which is Belize.
Yes.
My family members are located in these two different nations. I just wonder if the public in general is aware of the black people, black Caribs who live in Honduras and Belize, having the connection to Dominica and St. Vincent.
Saint
I just want to clarify that because it looks to me that many people are unaware of that connection, that black people in Honduras and Belize are related.
Right.
They have the same blood lineage to those black Caribs who still live in St. Vincent.
Yes. Yeah, he mentioned it there. I guess we didn't have a time to fully explore it, but I had that as a question, by the way, because I'm familiar with it. Certainly, Prime Minister Dr. Ralph Gonzalez has spoken of it, and he did mention that these were the two places where the fiercest resistance took place, St. Vincent and also in Dominica. And I know that people then migrated into Honduras and into Belize. And when I was in Belize, actually, my wife and I, because we do travel, we actually hooked up and connected with people from the Garifuna community and went to some of the cultural centers and had conversations with people there in Belize. Rich history. I may even come back and do a program on that history alone. So really appreciate your call. We're going to try to get a couple more calls in, but really appreciate your call and illuminating that aspect of the history on Indigenous Peoples Day. Again, 212-209-2... Well, I guess we have another caller. Let's take let's take another caller right now. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon. This is Darla calling from Brooklyn. Quick comment, the Garifunas had helped, I think, either Salvador or Guatemala to win the war because of their different language. Secondly, the Jews always talk about marching with black folks, you know, with the black prop issues here. When they got in the door for their reparations, did they call the black leaders and say, listen, guys, we are about to get some stuff for reparations, come on in and let's fight together? Because they're always talking about the march in 62 and the march here, and there were two or three Jews who got killed in the South. But I want to know, when the time came for them to get their reparations, did they call Martin Luther King and all those before who were leading out to say, come guys, let's go in together, let's share the spoils? I want to hear that part of it. I don't want to hear who they march with, because up to now they're collecting the money.
Well, now we're getting into stereotypes that we should not be captured by. Let me just say this. We're talking about two different historical experiences. In the Second World War, during that period, it's not likely that Martin Luther King would have been called, because he was just really born in that era. And so the Holocaust, the Jewish Holocaust, has its own distinctiveness. It does set a precedent among many that for reparations. But what I can say is, in the struggle for reparations today, as in the civil rights movement, there are many people of Jewish Jewish faith, of Jews, who have been involved, integrally involved, in the struggle for black liberation, and now people who are also struggling for reparations. So I don't know of any particular necessity of Jews sort of coming together in some collective to demand reparations. There are many people as human beings who happen to be white and of different faiths who are indeed involved in the forefront of this liberation, of the struggle for reparations, including we have a group that's working with the National African American Reparations Committee called Commission called the Fund for Reparations Now. There are many people who are involved in that. We don't sort of ask them whether they're Italian or whether they're Jews or whether they're Muslim or whatever. These are mostly white people, you know, who are anti-racist progressives who are engaged, and we welcome their support. Well, we're out of time, unfortunately. Oh, I wish we had more time. Maybe next couple of weeks from now, we'll come back and revisit this conversation. Obviously, there were people who would have liked to have joined the conversation. This is the Professor, Dr. Ron Daniels. We really hope you've appreciated this program on Indigenous Peoples Day here on 99.5 FM. And that's WBAI on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with YCRadio.org. We'll see you again next week. Time is really wasted. There's no guarantee.